who live in poverty, workers, union organizers, union members, are pretty much invisible in the media. So that would be one thing that you would reverse.
Absolutely. I'd put them front and center. They are the majority. They are the people most like the majority of your readers. You know, there's an old joke that it's very popular in Europe, in particular in Germany. It has to do with the waning months of the Nazi regime in Germany. And two Germans are portrayed in this joke looking at the Rhine River from a hill. And one turns to the other and says, "Isn't it wonderful that Germany is still prospering? Germany is doing well despite the war. There's an immense traffic up and down the Rhine of barges showing this wonderful sign." And the other person says to him, "Hans, we're looking at the Rhine. There's no boat in sight. Nothing's happening." And Fritz says to Hans, no. "To understand the economy, you don't look at the Rhine to see the traffic on the Rhine. You look in the newspaper." And, you know, the joke being that the newspaper presents the reality that those who control the newspapers wish to have everybody believe. But it's not a reliable source if it isn't in the hands of the mass of people. It's going to serve those in whose hands it does lie, and that goes to the core of the problem of a free press when you allow large corporations to basically own most of them.
We've been speaking with Richard Wolff, professor of economics, currently teaching at the New School in Manhattan. He's also the author of Democracy at Work, A Cure for Capitalism. Thanks again for joining us today on Counterspin, Richard Wolff.
It's been my pleasure, and thank you for the opportunity.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 6:01. Next is Bread and Roses.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor Cross Cultural Rhythms at the 40th Avenue Garage, a showcase of music, dance, and spoken word performances, all sharing roots in African culture. Cross Cultural Rhythms will take place on Saturday, October 18th, from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage, 1711 Southeast 40th Avenue in Portland. This is a benefit for the Obo Addy Legacy Project. Confirmed performances include Ghanaian drumming and dance, South African boot dance and music, multiple spoken word artists, and more. Again, that's Cross Cultural Rhythms, Saturday, October 18th from 7 to 10 p.m. at the 40th Avenue Garage in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Portland performance of Carla Lara, Thursday, October 23rd from 7 to 10 p.m. Carla Lara, Honduran jazz singer, songwriter, and political activist, will be performing at Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. She is a working artist, journalist, and feminist in a country where resistance in her artistic life has always been tied to political life in Central America. That's Carla Lara, Thursday, October 23rd from 7 to 10 p.m. at Tabor Space in Portland. More information about this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market. From our hands to yours, celebrating 41 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 1st through Christmas Eve in Waterfront. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by the KBOO Foundation members and a grant from True West. Presenting Texas songwriter and jazz singer Kate Edmondson with Dominic Castillo, Monday, October 20th at the Alberta Rose Theater. Tickets for Kate Edmondson, October 20th, are available at albertarosetheater.com.
at the dawn of the day. All the darkened kitchens, the Millar's grave, all touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs, on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio program in the country. This airspace is shared among women-identified radio activists. And if you're interested in training as a producer or engineer, no experience necessary, please don't hesitate to contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator, Ani Haynes, at volunteer@kboo.org. Visit us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm, Bread and Roses, or on Facebook, KBOO, Bread and Roses. I'm your host this week, Leanne Kranz, and our engineer is Delphine Crescenzo. Tonight, Bread and Roses hosts a live literary happening by the Unchaste Readers Series, Women Reading Their Minds. If you can only see the number of people in this room, it's going to be great. The Unchaste Readers Series is a forum for local women-identified and gender-flexing feminist writers to give voice to their work for a live, supportive audience. These public readings take place on the third Tuesday every other month in Portland, Oregon, currently at the Knockback Bar on Alberta. The next one is scheduled for Tuesday, November 18th at 7:30. But tonight, we're doing it live on the radio. I'm joined in the studio by the founder and curator, Jenny Forrester.
Hi, Leanne. Yay.
She has assembled this group of seven local writers who've graciously agreed to share their words with us. We have KMA, Carrie Seitzinger, Laura Green, Dami Shoemaker, Intisar Abioto, Nikki Shulak, and Nadia Martinez Chantry. Welcome, all you Unchaste writers.
Thank you.
Jenny, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me back.
I'm going to turn it over to you.
that's fine with me. I love a microphone. So I'm usually, when I have an Unchaste Reader Series, I open with a joke, like a pirate joke, a really good pirate joke, or my favorite, why is 6 afraid of 7? Because 7, 8, 9. But on the radio, I just did it, right? So I just wanted to remind the listeners that we will abide by the FCC standards, but some content of this show may not be appropriate for children 16 and under. So, to repeat, we will be FCC compliant, but some content may not be suitable for all listening audience members. You know who you are, kids. Parents, we will provide you with some opportunities for the talk, if that's what you'd like to do tonight. So, I'm going to give you a moment to make sure that's what you want to do, because we're going to get down to it. So, first of all, I'd like to say that Unchaste came about because I wanted to create a space where women could talk about their experience being a woman, whatever that is. And I don't ask people what they're going to write. I don't tell people what to say. Every once in a while, I'll say, ooh, I really like that. Can you read that at Unchaste? But it's most often, I just want to hear what you have to say, and I want to give you that space to do it. So we're going to go. Ready, KMA?
Ready.
All right. So KMA, Catherine Sullivan, co-founded, is the author of Necessary Fire, winner of the St. Lawrence Book Award. The collection will be released this January from Black Lawrence Press. Her poems have recently appeared or are forthcoming in Boston Review, Southern Humanities Review, Forklift, Ohio, The Nervous Breakdown, Gargoyle, and Diode. She is the editor-in-chief of Vinyl Poetry and the publisher at Yes Yes Books.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jenny and Leanne, for putting this great set together. This is fabulous.
Thank you.
I've got a couple pieces, and thanks for including me. Thrashing. I'll start with the way my youngest rubs the center of my forehead with his thumb when I need to calm down or he's about to ask for an advance on his allowance so he can buy weed or a permanent marker for Emily, who will cover his forearms in viney tattoos and has invited him to work the river with her this summer so he can earn money by renting inner tubes to country boys who earn county medals wrestling other boys in leotards on mats, but would break and bloody my son for rocking rayon genie pants and hemp bracelets and loving another boy on the mouth the way we were meant to, soft and hard and aiming for each other's center, so we might for a moment pretend we aren't alone as we thrash and thrash and thrash in this world of lips and blood and rivers. Oil moon rises. In a land where peace equals a naked woman on her knees milking a goat, where a river of pink babies is called the source of life, I am not a woman at tea, the same as still life with pear. I will not bathe or dance naked while men in felt hats play cards. I'd rather be a baboon with tongue out, a shock of white snapdragon amidst bold jungle leaves. Monet grinds his view, feel his fist in the color. I prefer a landscape in pieces where I can fashion the whole myself from blue mountains and red roofs, from orchids and a hummingbird. The orchid, thought of as refined, a glistening vulva, a girl waiting, flourishes in sweat and tangle with muscle and sinew, tension just under the skin to keep it from exploding. I don't need your benediction, not for glory, not for your bronze wings or swirling stumps. My left shoulder glows at dawn. I am the coming storm.
God, that's so beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you.
So usually we applaud in at Unchased Readers, and so we were talking about what we will do at the end, and I thought that people could speak to the different reactions they have towards each other. So if people want to do that, they will just be jumping in. Carrie Seitzinger is the author of the book Fall Ill Medicine, which was named a 2013 finalist for the Stafford Hall Award for Poetry. She is the co-publisher of Small Doggies Press. She is also the co-founder and editor-in-chief of the online arts and culture magazine Nailed.
Thanks, Jenny. I have two poems. The first one is in Fall Ill Medicine. It's called Chair. One. A lover tied me to a chair once. I like the memory of it more than the act itself. Two. I left the idea of you in Virginia with our phone sex and all of the mosquitoes who adored my blood. I can't remember your voice saying what I want to remember it saying, but everything else. Three. Now that I am a lesbian, every time I see a woman, I think of sex. I imagine the texture of her hair. I imagine if she would laugh with me in the morning. I wake up in a good mood when I'm sure about something. Four. I made love to a chair once. It was equal and homosexual. My ankles to the legs, my arms to its arms. And afterwards, wishing for someone to make themselves comfortable inside me. The title of this poem is a quote by Pablo Neruda, "You Live Again in Time." Collected my stones and shock crystals, aligned in starburst mosaic around the feet. The goal is to ground down until the legs pierce into earth like swords in the snow. But how did I become this woman, salting my oatmeal and feathering dust along the wood grain? Even the dream came to wake me, brought a face like a pool to wish into and a sturdy forearm at my lumbar, rope to lean in and twist up, dancing from a safe ceiling. And when my eyes quaked open, my desire shook in a swimsuit, daring to synchronize with absence, shuffling through old letters where my name was red dress, where that salt flake chip of your tooth came showcased in cellophane that you hole punched to a postcard, where we pretended to be simple in our longing, dunk the nest of hornets in docile pond, but only did we excite it further.
Thank you so much, Carrie. I have, I tell the story about Carrie almost every time Carrie and I are in the same room. When I read her book, Fall Ill Medicine, the first time I was on a plane after dropping my daughter off in college across the entire country, and I have one child. So it was a painful moment, and even though I had a lot of whiskey in me, I was still in agony, and Carrie helped me be reborn as a different kind of mother. So thank you.
Cool.
Thank you, KMA and Carrie. Thank you very much. What a powerful start. Oh, my. You're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. Tonight, we're hosting a live reading by the Unchaste Readers series, Women Reading Their Minds. Jenny Forrester.
And I'm going to do the FCC warning again. So all those listening, it may not be suitable for everyone, even though we are FCC compliant. If you're a parent, we will provide you the opportunity to have the talk if your children are listening. So if you want that, great.
Any of my relatives might want
right.
to click.
Laura Green is a half-Mexican tattooed bastard child of a renegade nun who's never caused a traffic accident and is currently working on a book about all of it. And she gave me that bio to read. I just want you to know that.
So proud about the traffic accident part. Those are beautiful. Mine is not poems, but it has Wonder Woman in it. So maybe hopefully that's enough. Okay. There's a giant poster of Wonder Woman on the wall beside my bed. She's standing with her feet far apart and her hands in fists on her smooth, round hips. I know that she's a superhero, but I don't know what a superhero is. We have no television, and my mom's not like other moms. She won't attend to things like this. This kind of star can't hold her gaze at all. And yet, here is Wonder Woman in her gleaming costume. She's every kind of mystery. I look up at her from my bed. Her hair is black, her eyes are pale blue, she doesn't smile, her fists and her expression are closed, but all the rest of her is spread wide open. She knows we're watching. Does she allow it? Endure it? Does she encourage it? Does she enjoy it? Other little girls may want to be this unarmed, undressed Wonder Woman, but I do not. I do not want to be her. I want to have her. I want to clap and shout till I catch her eye, then herd her away from the rest of the world. I want to put my forehead to her forehead and whisper so only she can hear me. I want to hide with her under blankets or in a cave, to take her into a closet or to the roof of the tallest building or an empty beach. I want to put her under my bed. I want to have her all to myself. My feelings for Wonder Woman are complicated and profound. Their dazzling brightness, a soft, familiar burn, like reaching back, like something ancient, though I'm only 5. What could be ancient in me? The feelings crackle like a sparkler lit inside my ribcage. They shine spectacular, then vanish like constellations in the sun. Just a few years ago, I was a connected thing, continuous. Now Wonder Woman is in me and not my mother, my first secret, though I'm barely separate. Terrifying, inescapable, beautiful. She's better glanced at fleetingly through mostly lowered eyelids, like an eclipse of the sun or like God. What is happening with Wonder Woman's clothes? It's as if she had been dressed to go battle evil until someone came along and stole most of her outfit. Why did she let them? Why should her thighs be so loose and gleaming? Her suit, binds, it's inelastic, it deflects the light. So where the blue shiny stuff follows Wonder Woman's curve into shadow, it goes black. You can't see in such blackness. You'd have to feel your way. And the shackles? How did they get on Wonder Woman? Can they be taken off? Should they be taken off? I want to touch them. I want to touch her skin just before they lock it down. I want to trace her edge with my finger and then with my mouth. My sheets smell like citrus and static. I push my face against the wall. It shouldn't smell like home for this. Who is she? I ask my mom about Wonder Woman. My mother says, she protects people. She's a hero. Does she fight danger? Does she run? Do people chase her? And what if she's caught? Surrounded by threats with her secrets all falling out. How does that feel? I want it to feel embarrassing and also inevitable, like bravery and giving in all at once. I want her to try to keep herself concealed, to want to keep herself contained, and then to go completely soft. I want to be there for that moment when the stitching gives and it is wrong and terrible and the relief. And then sometimes what I want is to be the one who takes her clothes away. And despite the fact that it will surely lead to scrapes in soft and secret places, I want her to let me. I want to make her feel powerless and obliging despite her strength. I want to be there while she fights masked men in her underwear. I want to fight alongside her. I want her to fight for me, even though it causes her to suffer and chafe. And then I want to rescue her from it all and have her. I don't know what then, just possession. She is mine. I want to have her smell. I want her smell to rub off on me. This want stretches back for decades, many more years of want than my tiny life can represent. I want stuffed dogs with long fuzzy hair that you can shake and make wild. I want jelly shoes like all the other kids, even if my feet sweat in them and stink. But those are things I want in the sun, out on the surface. This wanting is a cave that I could walk into forever. I want to press myself into my poster and steal this woman away.
Thank you. So Laura's book is going to be stunning. I get to read it as it is now, and get I can to. Tell you, yeah, I'm so happy. Tommy J. Shoemaker is a gender-flexing feminist who worked in social services for nearly 25 years, then stopped and started writing seriously in Dangerous Writers in 2010. Tommy is currently attending Pacific University's MFA in Writing program. Tommy is the founder of the Burnt Tongue Quarterly Reading Series and has been published in a few places, most recently in the Forest Avenue Press Anthology, The Night and the Rain and the River.
Thank you, Jenny. And thanks again for having me back, Leanne. I wanted to write a story to address the travesty of underage girls getting blamed for getting into sexual situations and running away or whatever with older men or older people. And I wrote this story that was actually published in Nail Magazine online, and this is an excerpt from that. The first half is here. You can see the second half at nail.com. You were 15 and in a required class, Industrial Creative Arts, sixth period. You've been stalling since Monday after picking out the floral stencil to copy, cut out, and sandblast onto the back of a mirror as a wedding present for a man who's been trying to get at you since you were 14. You were 14 and at his ex-wife's house. You lived there all summer to watch their boys while she worked at the nursing home with your mom. They called him Jackass like it was his name. Said he couldn't be trusted. You watched from the door when he honked instead of taking the boys all the way out to his Bronco. Every Thursday, he smiled and hollered, "How y'all doing?" from the driveway. Carolina drawl and Ray-Bans, and he didn't seem so bad. He started waving back. One Thursday, he hollered, "Come on along. The boys can fish, and you can swim," he said. "I'll pay you a little extra." You were waist-deep in the river in that one piece that gave you a costume pin-up cleavage when he waded over and offered you a beer. After the fourth Budweiser and too many earfuls of how grown-up you'd become, you started to feel sick. You got out of the water and pulled your baseball jersey on over your head and said, "Listen to your father," when he told the boys to go and wait in the truck. You packed up the tackle and waited at the picnic table. sat on the bench backward and crossed your legs at the knee as if you knew how. He straddled the bench right next to you and put his hand on your shoulder. Orange fish bait under his nails didn't smell orange at all. Just one little kiss, he said. It wasn't just one. With your mouth tennis shoe dry and your breath short, you pushed him away, but only a little. He sucked warm beer in past his teeth, his partial. Fish bait thumb brushed your bottom lip, and you knew what he wanted. Thirsty for whatever it is the 14-year-old girls were thirsty for, you opened your mouth. Spit warm bud from his mouth to yours. His sandpaper fingers squeezed just above your knee, and you twitched. Boy crazy. Your body pushed toward that familiar tingle you were too young to know was hardwired and didn't want to want. The tingle started out a trickle, but grew steady to that flat tire thwump, 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 deep inside that place you could never reach. No, you said. What about your fiancé? His thick fingers didn't know no. His fingernails scratched your baby fat thigh, trying to wiggle under the hem of your wet Levi's cutoffs. He removed his fingers, but they brushed across your C-cups on the way up to your face, lifted your chin. I thought you wanted it, he said. I do, but I don't feel so good, he said. I promise, next time. He took you and the boys home, gave you $5 extra. The next week, he left for oil rig work in Alaska. You felt unfinished. His fiancée called that Thursday. Do you have the boys ready? She asked. Of course you had them ready. If she knew anything at all, she'd know that you always had them ready. She called every Thursday for who knows how many Thursdays. She picked them up in his vet. Fire engine red, T-top down. You would never put two kids in one seatbelt. The last Thursday of summer, you felt the rumble of his Bronco in the center of your belly before the sound of the muffler could reach your ears. Waffle stomped gravel kicked up behind you before you realized it wasn't him in the driver's seat. You walked the rest of the way to the Bronco, smiling like it was her you were happy to see. You jumped up on the running board and leaned through the passenger side, still smiling that lie. Fish bait and Budweiser shot up your nostrils and climbed down your spine. Thwump. We should go to the drive-in tomorrow night, you said, when he didn't know what else to say. Why not? We can take the vet. She brought box wine that made you sip instead of chug. She drunk cried like your mom. She asked you about boyfriends you pretended to have, then told you about your cherry she assumed was intact. Said the first time you do it, there might be blood. You didn't have it in you to talk about the crusty old uncle who got to you in the bathroom when you were four. So you asked her if the boy's dad was her first. You sat and held her hand when she told you how special he made her feel. You won't remember the movie, but you remember learning right then how much easier it is to let someone go on believing what they need to believe in order to get by. Thank you.
Thank you, Domi. Domi actually had the idea of us doing this reading, so thank you for that.
It was a good one.
Yeah, it was a great idea. I hope. So far, is it good? I also want to take a moment, if I could, to thank people. So I want to thank all of you for coming here, and thank you, Kebu, and thank you, Leanne, and thank you again, Domi. And I also want to thank St. John's Booksellers, who often sponsors readings. Thank you, Nina Rauta. Mm.
You're listening to Bread and Roses on Kebu. We are joined by Unchaste Readers, Women Reading Their Minds, doing a live reading event here on Bread and Roses. I have the pleasure now of introducing the founder and curator of the series before a piece that she plans to share with us tonight. Jenny Forrester's most recent work will appear in the Listen to Your Mother anthology, published by Putnam in 2015. She curates this series here in Portland, the Unchaste Reader Series. Thank you, Jenny.
I'd been a faithful, religious child, but as a teenager, I had failed to remain pure according to the edicts of my childhood's religion. I loved religion, so I had decided to write one of my own based on equality. If men could sin without calling it sin, then so could I. I worshipped, so to speak, in trucks parked in the mountains and in cars parked on the mesas and in the deep grasses beside rushing Colorado rivers. I modeled my religion after the one that Joseph Smith, the Latter-day Saint, wrote. This Mormon forefather founded a new faith because he fell in love with women and wanted to preserve their integrity through marriage, even if it meant marrying more than one at a time. It was a great sacrifice, a great duty. My mom and I talked often about religion because in that small town of 800 people and 7 churches, there was a lot to talk about. I didn't tell my mom about my backseat church services, but I did tell her that there was no reason that women couldn't have multiple husbands. My mom said, "I don't even want one husband." We laughed as the sun set over the chalk-colored hills across the lonely mountain highway. We talked as darkness and stars filled the sky above the great mesa in the distance and the mountains to the east of our trailer. "What are you talking about?" my brother wanted to know, his hair ruffled on his head, no t-shirt over his rib-ragged chest. "Oh, nothing," my mom said. She shushed me with her gaze. Some conversations weren't meant for my brother's ears. I'd been a tidy Christian when my boyfriend said that I had to have sex or he would break up with me. He'd promised we'd get married. But when he hurt me one too many times and forced his way into me one too many times, I decided I didn't want to get married, even though it meant that I was ruined in God's eyes. But then I came up with the new religion idea based on backseat feminism. In my religion, I wanted to ignore sin. I wanted a God of mercy rather than one of judgment, or better yet, no God at all. I wanted the holy text to be written on my skin. I wanted many things, but my religion was flawed, as religions can be, and I was a flawed parishioner, as parishioners can be. In the end, I failed to bring my new religion out into the sunlight, etched into stone tablets. I did have a mythology. Some called it a bad reputation. A few boys wrote psalms to me, written on the bathroom walls.
Thank you, Jenny Forrester.
Intisar Abioto is an explorer, photographer, dancer, writer, and performer. Born in Memphis, Tennessee, to a family of artists, activists, and historians, she is always chasing the important tale, the tale that can change the future. She is currently working on The Black Portlanders, a photo, essay, and exploratory project documenting the presence of people of African descent in Portland, Oregon. You can find her at intisarabioto.com.
The word. The geographic sense of the word. The cosmetic sense of the word, the temporal sense of the word, the literal sense of the word, the numeral sense of the word, the geriatric sense of the word, the pediatric sense of the word, the apologetic sense of the word, the comedic sense of the word, the kinetic sense of the word, prophetic sense of the word, the original word, the origin point of the word, the fount of the word. The secondary word, the tertiary word, the worldly word, the godly word, the ungodly word, the temporal word, the visual word, the oral and the aural word, the sonic word and the written word, the spoken word, the sense of a supernatural word, the sense of a preternatural word. The Bluebeardian sense of the word, the destructive sense of the word, the murderous sense of the word. The budgetary, the narrative, the Oedipal sense of the word, the Atlantean sense of the word, the medial sense of the word, the customary sense of the word, the legal, the private, the public, the infantile sense of the word, the spinal sense of the word, the collective sense of the word, the gracious sense of the word, the curated sense of the word, the live sense of the word. The identical sense of the word, the fraternal, the invisible, the unknown, the repetitive sense of the word. the repeated sense of the word, the stalwart, the one and only sense of the word, the wordly word, the readerly sense of the word, the definitive sense of the word, the multi-tongued sense of the word, the tongued sense of the word, the fine sense of the word, the vocal sense, the silent sense of the word, the dirty sense of the word, the bound sense of the word, the words, the forthcoming sense of the word, the gargoylean sense of the word, the virginal sense of the word, the gushing sense of the word, the apocryphal sense of the word, the extrapolated sense of the word, the masturbatory sense of the word, the bastardized sense of the word, the round sense of the word, the inescapable sense of the word, the fleeting, mythological, the embodied, the lipped and lapped up sense of the word, the first sense of the word, the sense of the sense of the word, the original seven words. The sense of the seven words I cannot say on the air, sense of the word. The faithful sense of the word, the etched and crotcheted and crossed up sense of the word, the sense of the word, the sense of her word, the taste of the word, the taste of her words, the taste of her. The last sense of the word, the ongoing sense of the word. This and our and yours and his and mine. This embodied sense of her words.
Thank you, Intisar. Thank you so much. Another thing that I say at Unchaste Readers that it's better than church, because you know now that I loved church. When I lost church, I need another one. Now I have one. So thank you. Nikki Shulak, with the chemical formula for Prozac tattooed on her wrist, Nikki Shulak writes and performs personal stories about bodies. Her essay on not seeing whales about having brain aneurysms was a notable selection in Best American Essays in 2013.
Thank you, Jenny. I was walking toward the bathroom, holding a small pink package. My 7-year-old son asked, "Is that a present, Mommy?" "No," I told him, "it's not a present." "What is it?" I hesitated. My son hates blood. He hates the thought of blood. Our next door neighbors have chickens, Pecky and Bess. I spontaneously decide these two friendly hens would be my entree to what some call a somewhat honest answer. I look down at my son. "It's the time of month when I lay an egg, like Pecky and Bess do. And this," I held up the little pink package, "is called a pad. I put it in my underwear to catch the egg." "You're gonna lay an egg?" "Well, not exactly lay an egg, more like pass an egg." A look of confused repulsion crossed his face. "Sometimes people call it shedding an egg," I explained. His sister called out from her room. "Mom has her period," she told him. "That means she's bleeding. The pad will catch the blood and the egg, but the egg is very small. You can't see it." My son was quiet for a long moment. It felt like the silent pause when kids fall down before they scream. "You're gonna bleed and pass an egg on that?" He looked at the little pink package like it was a time bomb. "Yep. And then you'll be done?" I should have just said yes, that I would be done. But I didn't. I was warmed up. So I gave a complete and honest answer. Then he got mad, like my body had personally betrayed him. "That is disgusting," he ran to his room, crying. A smart woman once told me, "Every feminist should raise a son." I didn't know what she meant until now. I knocked on his door. "You may not come in," Get your big bloody vagina away from me and all my Power Rangers. I open my son's door slightly. Hey, buddy, don't touch me, he warned. Buddy, I've been shedding eggs your whole life. This is nothing new. He came out from under his covers. I don't want to get married, he said. I don't ever want to sleep with a woman who has a vagina. My son didn't like blood on knees or coming out of noses. Maybe, I said, you won't marry a person with a vagina. He sniffled. But if I don't marry a person with a vagina, then I can't have babies. My son loves babies. Babies melt his little heart. You can make other arrangements, I told him. There's lots of ways to make a family. The next morning, he looked across the breakfast table at me. Mommy, he whispered, are you still shedding that egg? We listened to the chickens clucking. Yes, I whispered back, I am.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Nikki. Mujer Madre Maestra, Nadia Martinez Chantry, lives in each of these roles. Moment by moment, day by day, she is a survivor with a simple daily goal: to find, amplify, and honor her own strength as a woman, a mother, and a teacher.
You come from a long line of womanizers. Your grandfather, a well-known ladies' man, chased anything with a skirt and kept his mistress in another state. Your father, well known for his fear of women, found a lady to keep his bed warm while he logged in another state. And you? Where do you keep your lover? Throughout the city. You don't have only one who makes you laugh or cooks great meals. You have several, because you enjoy intimacy. Take pleasure in the uniqueness of each body that allows you to love it, because that's what you do. You love it. Worship it. The curve of a shoulder, the strength of a thigh, the sensuousness of a bottom lip, the tendons in a hand, the thickness of eyelashes. You even love parts you can't love with your mouth, nor your hands. The smell of skin, the infinity of eye color, the throaty laugh, the catch of a gasp, the pulse in a throat. You want all of it, and so you take it. The fishing was much better before you got married. Friends invited you out in the town. There was always someone new to meet at a party, and somehow everyone feels safer when you say, you know Tony? Him and I went to school together. You feel more adventurous, more free to thoroughly explore with this familiar stranger. Now you're married with two kids, a third on the way, and friends don't invite you out on the town. You're left to your own devices, flying solo, without a wingman, to bars, concerts, lectures at the local university. Then, sometimes lust strikes in totally unprepared moments. Waiting in line at the grocery store, or buying a book at Powell's. Your ring's on, and when they notice it, and then notice you noticing them noticing the ring, and the sly, embarrassed grins break out, you know you have them. Those aren't as often as you would like, but they are terrific, because there's something extra hot about a ring. The danger, the sneaking around, the beautiful, socially constructed idea of sinning. Of course, you can never use your place. Your place with smelly diapers in the wash, socks simply everywhere, dirty dishes in a filthy kitchen, and toys. God, the toys! It's amazing you don't break your neck each morning. Instead, you get a grand tour of apartments and houses in this great city of ours. Northeast bus lines illuminating the hardwood floor. Mount Tabor Heights, Selwood laziness. Island farmlands, downtown high-rise views, immaculate counters and yummy smelly bathrooms. Sexy sheets, champagne and showers, and loud music to gyrate to. You love not being home. You love bodies and you love loving them, but you really love the whole package, the experience. Like a lion in a cage, you need fresh meat to stave off the insanity creeping, seeping, pulsing through, under, over the enclosed walls. The brain craves lounging on a balcony with too many potted flowers, drinking out of a different wine glass, leaning against a counter while they flip you a grilled cheese. Sitting on a comfy couch with a silly colored accent wall, smells of a new bed, eating fruit off of a lover's back. Discovering, claiming, all new, all experienced, all appreciated. How else will you live? How else will you survive? Your spouse never questions your whereabouts. Maybe there are suspicions. Maybe there's relief. You don't care. All you know is that it keeps you alive, keeps you from yelling at the kids or kicking the damn dog, keeps you smiling at your spouse day in and day out, helps you kiss them as they leave for work in the morning, as your eldest child clings to your skirt and proclaims, I'm hungry, Mommy.
Thank you. I know, it's really hard not to applaud after everybody, and I feel like...
Let's do it.
Should we? Thank you all so much. So one of the things I wanted to do today was talk about the idea of being unchaste and how it's... I still hear women and girls saying that they're not feminist, but... And I always wonder if we're going to stop having that conversation or if there's going to be some other conversation and what that the evolution of that is going to be. And so I like unchaste because it doesn't have a lot of baggage yet. We're putting our baggage or our word to it so that we can create something new, I hope. So I kind of wanted to talk with all of you about what it means.
And we'll do that right after we take a little musical break, if I don't mind. You're listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO. We're hosting a live event, the Unchaste Reader Series, Women Reading Their Minds. We'll be right back. It's Bonnie Raitt with Write Me a Few of Your Lines. Listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO, we have had a live reading by the Unchaste Reader Series, Women Reading Their Minds. We have with us in the studio the founder and curator, Jenny Forrester. We heard from KMA, Carrie Seitzinger, Laura Green, Dami Shoemaker, Intasar Abioto, Nikki Shulak, and Nadia Martinez Chantry. You guys, I'm really blown away. I knew it would be great, but I had no... You guys are at another level. Mm-hmm. So, thank you. And Jenny, you just set us all up to talk about the meaning of the word unchaste in your series. What does that mean to you guys?
So, what I did on the unchastereaders.com website is I put up different interviews with unchaste readers, and one of the things that I ask is what does it mean to be unchaste, and why is it important to be unchaste? And so you can check that out on the website. And also Carrie brought her why is it important, and maybe we'll all be inspired to talk when she does that.
Yeah, the question of why is it important to be unchaste was really interesting to me because I fully believe that it is important, especially as in your writing and your art. And so I mentioned in the interview that there was an essay on nailedmagazine.com that I wrote as the editor, just talking about the content that's on Nailed and why I think it's important, as it is, in my opinion, a time for women to start reclaiming their bodies. And as a woman writer, it is important to be unchaste in whatever way best serves you to represent the most honest version of yourself to the world. And that way... the more women that are, well, on the flip side, the more women that are writing as abiding, complacent figures in culture, the more that takes place, the longer we'll remain in these lockdown thought forms of previous generations, and there just isn't any need for that anymore. I think it's really interesting that you were talking about, you know, what is feminism, what these women who are saying, I'm not a feminist, but ... I don't understand that at all. It really peeves me. I don't know if anyone else has thoughts about like modern feminism or on the how it relates to the unchaste.
Well, I loved the question that Jenny posed to us, and so I looked up the definition of unchaste because I didn't really actually know what the word meant. Yeah, and it was actually really cool. So one of the meanings is impure. And I love that, actually, pairing that with feminism, because the notion of purity is outrageously repressive, specifically to women. And so, right, impure, exactly. So for me, that's one of the reasons why unchaste is a great word for us to walk forward with in our work.
Good.
This is Dami, and for me, unchaste is really important. I worked with disenfranchised youth for about 25 years, and it was all in it's all crisis related. And of course, I worked with girls and boys, and I had a difficult time sometimes relating to how girls interacted. They changed so quick. The girls that I worked with changed so quickly, and times changed so quickly, and girls are so influenced by their peer culture, you know, more than status, money, cars. Boys are generally influenced by those things, and girls are very much influenced as teenagers by the things going on around them. And the whole vilification of anything to do with bodies and sex and all of that was really shocking to me. You know, I grew up in a long time ago, like in the 70s and late 70s, early 80s, and we were actually more sort of, I guess, liberated than that, it seems like. It's sort of like the girls I've worked with have gotten even more rigid. Like, maybe it's the girls I worked with, but just people I talk to. It's almost like a political rigidity. Like, there's a separation that's getting wider and wider, and I think that it's because things are about to break, you know, and they need to break, and we need to have our voices out there, and we need to push it because that's what gets changed, you know. That's why people are activists. That's why people are on the fringes, and that's how our change comes from. So that, yeah, that's why this reading series is really, really important to me, and I hope lots and lots of people hear about it, as is Bread and Roses, you know, like, yeah, that's, yeah, what I have to say.
I think being unchaste is the more natural state than being chaste. And I think we're born unchaste, and then we spend some time learning to be chaste, and then we spend the rest of our time trying to be unchaste. And that's where I'm at now. Mm-hmm. I was telling people this week that I was reading with unchaste readers, and I kept saying unchaste and uncouth also. Mm-hmm. Unchaste and uncouth.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, Dami, what you said about the 70s and 80s, because that's the 80s is the time I'm talking about, and it's really regional, because where I grew up, there was no liberal anything there. The most liberal person was my mother, and so it's like the coastlines and certain communities on the coastlines are speaking about feminism, and it's like we keep having to reinvent the wheel within different communities and then within different landscapes. Mm-hmm. And at some point, like you say, it is going to break. Maybe it's breaking. I'm loving hearing about people talking about consent and consent culture. It's a fantastic idea. I think we should follow through on that.
Yeah, I guess just thinking about the word unchaste, what I think about initially, or what I sense, is an unfastening, like something, like some ribbon or some, you know, something being untied and let loose, like whether it's your ribs, your body, your, you know, the words you say. I think like a loosening of something, and that can be in any sense at all. And yeah, I really appreciate that word.
So I also wanted to make sure that you have a moment to talk about the projects that you're working on. Because that's one of the things we do at Untaste is we drink, right? And we say things like, hey, what are you working on? And so I thought it would be fun to do that on the radio if you want to.
Okay. This is Dami Shoemaker. I'm working on a collection of linked short stories and linked stories. I'm not sure exactly how it'll come out, but I've putting my manuscript together in school and aside from that, so that's what I'm working on. And Burnt Tongue, the reading series, but mm-hmm. November 22nd.
This is Nadia, and I'm working on raising three feminist sons.
Yes. Good job. That's all small.
This is Laura. I'm working in my writing on a collection of stories about me, because most people, I think, want to know more about me. And so I'm going to basically say all the things. And growing up the bastard child of a renegade nun, which I was, and not everybody is. So that's my unique perspective that I'm planning to share widely.
Wow, nothing as cool as that. This is KMA. We did just send our youngest off to college, and he's the youngest of five, and so actually, yeah, that's awesome. And then, so that's, we've already worked on that. My first poetry collection is coming out in January from Black Lawrence Press, Necessary Fire. And the first piece I read tonight was from that. And the second piece is from my second collection, which is more ekphrastic pieces, specifically as a woman responding to classical art. And that's called Inclined to Riot. So I'm kind of in the middle of that project.
This is Carrie Seitzinger. I'm working on a body of poems that each poem is inspired by a line of poetry by another poet. The poems are extremely personal, and writing about some of the blocked memories of my past has been easier reaching to these other poets in the process of doing that. I'm about halfway finished, so I have no idea when it will be done.
I'm working on writing up a weight loss program that I've invented. It's called Weight Loss Through Poetry, and the book is called 40 Poems for 40 Pounds.
This is Intisara Bioto. I've just been working on different arts projects. I'm still working on the Black Portlanders. I've been working on a project with the Urban League of Portland called the State of Black Oregon, just like traveling around the state, talking to Black people. I've also just been going back to some personal photo word, I guess body work, I guess like relaunching my portfolio or perhaps it's like one of my portfolios over at theintisar.com, just like self-portraiture and like just word art and exploration. So yeah, exploration.
So the next reading is Tuesday, November 18th at the Knockback Bar at 7:30 p.m. You can find more about Unchased Readers at unchasedreaders.com.
Thank you, Jenny Forrester, Carrie Seitzinger, KMA, Laura Green, Dami Shoemaker, Intisara Abioto, Nikki Shulak, Nadia Martinez Chantry. Thanks so much for being our guests on Bread and Roses. This is the first time we've done this. I hope it's not the last. I'm really, really impressed with all of you, and I wish you the best. Thank you, Delphine, for being our engineer. Thank you for listening and supporting KBOO in our recent membership drive. I'm Leanne. This is Sue Foley with Let Me Drive.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Voices in Action,